Do you remember those Magic Eye posters? They were those multicolored, vertical or horizontal repeating patterns that looked like a busy piece of fabric until you stared at it for a moment or two, and your eyes would relax and unfocus, and then suddenly, before your eyes, would pop a vivid moving scene, antelope stampeding or a psychedelic gyrating Mona Lisa. I hated those posters. They adorned our art rooms in school, and I could never quite get the hang of them. It was like everyone was in on the joke, except me. What was most frustrating was that these pictures were right in front of my nose. I could see them, but I couldn't see what everyone else was seeing. I couldn't see the part that really mattered about them. I could only see the visual noise. Though I missed out on African safari scenes and fanciful recreations of old classics, the Jews of whom John writes lost out on their Messiah. Jesus was Joseph and Mary's son, the punk kid with gangly arms who had walked around their town many times before. What was it that all these ignorant crowds thought that they saw in him? Further, how could Jesus say such outlandish things and get away with it? These Jews from Jesus' hometown knew better. They knew that he had not come from the sky. He had come from Nazareth. However, as often happens with humans generally, and especially in the Gospels, they miss what Jesus is trying to tell them. They take the shallowest meaning they can concoct from his words, and when, after trying for the least amount of time requisite to solve the puzzle they've been given, they throw up their hands and they say, "See, Jesus, this is all nonsense. Come off your high horse. You're talking about the sky and bread and all kinds of ridiculous things. You're going to start to do real damage soon. We're looking for the Messiah, you know, and you're just confusing things." They think they want someone to overthrow Caesar and end their oppression once and for all. They think they're waiting for the most amazing political figure ever. Someone who will conquer the divisions in government, balance the budget, lower taxes, provide for the needs of the marginalized, and oust all the crooked types from their positions in power of power in Washington. I mean, in Jerusalem. Jesus does not make sense to them because Jesus was not meant for the sort of power they're thinking of. The Jews of Jesus' day are thinking within the system, so to speak. They're operating out of what they know about social and political challenges. And though they seek good things, they're not seeking the greatest good, which is to know and worship the one living God. Jesus does not make their dreams come true. He makes much more vital dreams come true, dreams they haven't had the imagination to construct because they've been distracted and constrained by the sort of socio-religious system they've constructed. They were staring at the magic eye picture, but their eyes couldn't focus on Jesus. The educated, religious people were convinced that the visual noise, the messy pattern of shapes, that was all that there was. There was nothing else to do but try to organize and categorize all of these messes. To carry the analogy a bit further, Jesus came to make the noisy shapes in front of them fall away and reveal himself as the answer. Jesus wants to conquer sin, not Congress, and he wants to build his kingdom in human hearts, not in marble halls. Jesus was not what the Jews of his day were expecting. As St. Augustine puts it, they saw and stood blind. They were so certain of what they were looking at and looking for. They were looking at Mary's strange kid, and they were looking for a gladiator. They missed what was right in front of them. It was God. Last summer, a movie came out entitled The Tree of Life. It was something like one of these magic eye posters. In the months before Jordan and I managed to see the film, we received two reviews over and over from critics and lay people alike. Either, "It was brilliant," It was the best movie that has ever been made. It's beyond words. I'm going to watch it for the rest of my life. Or, oh yeah, that movie. Yeah, well, there were some pretty parts in it. But it was actually really cheesy, and in the end, it was pretty pointless. There was nothing in between. Some saw the image that jumped in front of their eyes after staring for a while, and some just saw noise. Brad Pitt plays the father in the movie's flashbacks, which comprise most of the narrative plot in the film. And near the end of the movie, as his character has grown, he says, "Look at the glory that is all around us. It was here all along, and I never saw it." This character had spent his life looking for a certain type of glory, teaching his children to be strong and to fight, to strive against the world and bring as much as possible under their submission. In the end, he discovered that he and his children, all humanity, had not been created for that kind of life. The mother in the film faithfully lives with a vision of God's type of glory in her life. She plays the foil to the fierce father, treating her children with a gentle love, teaching them to approach the world and all people with awe and dignity. For the father in the film, who spent most of his life under the impression that he needed to beat the system, the world was a harsh place that needed to be guarded against. Some interpreters of the movie called him an embodiment of nature, what we humans would do when we're left to our own devices. The mother, from the very first scene, is an embodiment of grace, living with patience and gentleness for her children and her neighbors, showing them by example and by direction that the world is created by God to be good and full of wonder. The mother tries to teach her children that the glory God has created surrounds them. The movie is interspersed with fantastic scenes from nature, reefs and waterfalls and volcanoes. They say that collecting the shots of this for this film took more than 2 decades. The amazing thing is that the mother is not raising her children in a particularly beautiful place. They're somewhere in rural Texas. But she's convinced that God's glory and grace is overwhelming and transformative, even there. God came into the world as the exact opposite of what was expected, because God's glory is different from what humans imagine and anticipate. It could be no other way. If God was just what we suspect he would be, judging from the Old Testament and from our own experiences, if he looked and behaved just the way we calculated that he would, then God would just be a creation of our own minds, nothing more than what we ourselves can comprehend and put together. God offers us what we cannot imagine ourselves. He gives us something that is completely other. The movie's epigraph came from the book of Job, and it echoes what Jesus tells the audience in John's gospel today about himself, and it's what we are reminded of as we listen to his gospel and to God's heart. Across a black screen comes these white words. "Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation?" Amen.